Chapter 40. Mine, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Paul. Your invitation, apostrophe, returned Mr. Feeder. Paul, looking at it, found, in copper plate print, with the exception of his own name and the date, which were in Mr. Feeder's penmanship, that Dr. and Mrs. Blimmer requested the pleasure of Mr. P. Dombey's company at an early party on Wednesday evening the 17th instant, and that the hour was 7:30, and that the object was quadrilles. Mr. Toots also showed him, by holding up a companion sheet of paper, that Dr. and Mrs. Blimmer requested the pleasure of Mr. Toots' company at an early party on Wednesday evening the 17th instant, when the hour was 7:30, and when the object was quadrilles. He also found, on glancing at the table where Mr. Feeder sat, that the pleasure of Mr. Brick's company, and of Mr. Tozer's company, and of every young gentleman's company, was requested by Dr. and Mrs. Blimmer on the same genteel occasion. Mr. Feeder then told him, to his great joy, that his sister was invited, and that it was a half-yearly event, and that, as the holidays began that day, he could go away with his sister after the party, if he liked, which Paul interrupted him to say he would like, very much. Mr. Feeder then gave him to understand, that he would be expected to inform Dr. and Mrs. Blimmer, in superfine small hand, that Mr. P. Dombey would be happy to have the honor of waiting on them, in accordance with their polite invitation. Lastly, Mr. Feeder said, he had better not refer to the festive occasion, in the hearing of Dr. and Mrs. Blimmer, as these preliminaries, and the whole of the arrangements, were conducted on principles of classicality and high breeding, and that Dr. and Mrs. Blimmer on the one hand, and the young gentleman on the other, were supposed, in their scholastic capacities, not to have the least idea of what was in the wind. Paul thanked Mr. Feeder for these hints, and pocketing his invitation, sat down on a stool by the side of Mr. Toots, as usual. But Paul's head, which had long been ailing more or less, and was sometimes very heavy and painful, felt so uneasy that night, that he was obliged to support it on his hand. And yet it dropped so, that by little and little it sunk on Mr. Toot's knee, and rested there, as if it had no care, to be ever lifted up again. That was no reason why he should be deaf, but he must have been, he thought, for, by and by, he heard Mr. Feeder calling in his ear, and gently shaking him to rouse his attention. And when he raised his head, quite scared, and looked about him, he found that Dr. Blimmer had come into the room, and that the window was open, and that his forehead was wet with sprinkled water, though how all this had been done without his knowledge, was very curious indeed. Ah! Come, come! That's well. How is my little friend now? Apostrophe said Dr. Blimmer, encouragingly. Oh, quite well, thank you, sir, apostrophe said Paul. But there seemed to be something the matter with the floor, for he couldn't stand upon it steadily, and with the walls too, for they were inclined to turn round and round, and could only be stopped by being looked at very hard indeed. Mr. Toots' head had the appearance of being at once bigger and farther off than was quite natural, and when he took Paul in his arms, to carry him upstairs, Paul observed with astonishment, that the door was in quite a different place from that in which he had expected to find it, and almost thought, at first, that Mr. Toots was going to walk straight up the chimney. It was very kind of Mr. Toots, to carry him to the top of the house so tenderly, and Paul told him that it was. But Mr. Toots said he would do a great deal more than that, if he could, and indeed he did more as it was. For he helped Paul to undress, and helped him to bed, in the kindest manner possible, and then sat down by the bedside and chuckled very much, while Mr. Feeder, B.A., leaning over the bottom of the bedstead, set all the little bristles on his head bolt upright with his bony hands, and then made believe to spar at Paul with great science, on account of his being all right again, which was so uncommonly facetious, and kind to in Mr. Feeder, that Paul, not being able to make up his mind, whether it was best to laugh, or cry at him, did both at once. How Mr. Toots melted away, and Mr. Feeder changed into Mrs. Pipchin, Paul never thought of asking, neither was he at all curious to know. But when he saw Mrs. Pipchin standing at the bottom of the bed, instead of Mr. Feeder, he cried out, "Mrs. Pipchin, don't tell Florence!" Don't tell Florence what, my little Paul? Said Mrs. Pipchin, coming round to the bedside, and sitting down in the chair. About me, said Paul. No, said Mrs. Pipchin. What do you think I mean to do when I grow up, Mrs. Pipchin? Inquired Paul, turning his face towards her on his pillow, and resting his chin wistfully on his folded hands. Mrs. Pipchin couldn't guess. I mean, said Paul, to put my money all together in one bank, never try to get any more, go away into the country with my darling Florence, have a beautiful garden, fields, and woods, and live there with her all my life. Indeed, cried Mrs. Pipchin. Yes, said Paul. That's what I mean to do, when I he stopped, and pondered for a moment. Mrs. Pipchin's gray eye scanned his thoughtful face. If I grow up, said Paul. Then he went on immediately, to tell Mrs. Pipchin all about the party, about Florence's invitation, about the pride he would have in the admiration that would be felt for her by all the boys, about their being so kind to him, and fond of him, about his being so fond of them, and about his being so glad of it. Then he told Mrs. Pipchin about the analysis, and about his being certainly old-fashioned, and took Mrs. Pipchin's opinion on that point, and whether she knew why it was, and what it meant. Mrs. Pipchin denied the fact altogether, as the shortest way of getting out of the difficulty. But Paul was far from satisfied with that reply, and looked so searchingly at Mrs. Pipchin for a truer answer, that she was obliged to get up, and look out of the window to avoid his eyes. There was a certain calm apothecary, who attended at the establishment, when any of the young gentlemen were ill, and somehow he got into the room and appeared at the bedside, with Mrs. Blimmer. How they came there, or how long they had been there, Paul didn't know. But when he saw them, he sat up in bed, and answered all the apothecary's questions at full length, and whispered to him that Florence was not to know anything about it, if he pleased, and that he had set his mind upon her coming to the party. He was very chatty with the apothecary, and they parted excellent friends. Lying down again with his eyes shut, he heard the apothecary say, out of the room and quite a long way off, or he dreamed it, that there was a want of vital power. What was that, Paul wondered. And great constitutional weakness. That as the little fellow had set his heart on parting with his schoolmates on the 17th, it would be better to indulge the fancy, if he grew no worse. That he was glad to hear from Mrs. Pipchin, that the little fellow would go to his friends in London on the 18th. That he would write to Mr. Dombey, when he should have gained a better knowledge of the case, and before that day. That there was no immediate cause for what? Paul lost that word, and that the little fellow had a fine mind, but was an old-fashioned boy. What old-fashioned could that be? Paul wondered with a palpitating heart that was so visibly expressed in him, so plainly seen by so many people. He could neither make it out, nor trouble himself long with the effort. Mrs. Pipchin was again beside him. If she had ever been away, he thought she had gone out with the doctor, but it was all a dream perhaps, and presently a bottle and glass got into her hands magically, and she poured out the contents for him. After that, he had some real good jelly, which Mrs. Blimmer brought to him herself, and then he was so well, that Mrs. Pipchin went home, at his urgent solicitation, and Briggs and Tozer came to bed. Poor Briggs grumbled terribly about his own analysis, which could hardly have discomposed him more, if it had been a chemical process. But he was very good to Paul, and so was Tozer, and so were all the rest, for they everyone looked in, before going to bed, and said, "How are you now, Dombey? Cheer up, little Dombey. apostrophe, apostrophe, and so forth. After Briggs had got into bed, he lay awake for a long time, still bemoaning his analysis, and saying he knew it was all wrong, and they couldn't have analyzed a murderer worse, and how would Dr. Blimmer like it, if his pocket money depended on it? It was very easy, Briggs said, to make a galley slave of a boy all the half year, and then score him a bible, and to crib two dinners a week out of his board, and then score him up greedy. But that wasn't going to be submitted to, he believed, was it? Oh. Ah. Before the weak-eyed young man performed on the gong next morning, he came upstairs to Paul, and told him he was to lie still, which Paul very gladly did. Mrs. Pipchin reappeared a little before the apothecary, and a little after the good young woman whom Paul had seen cleaning the stove on that first morning.
How long ago it seemed now.
Had brought him his breakfast. There was another consultation a long way off, or else Paul dreamed it again, and then the apothecary, coming back with Dr. and Mrs. Blimmer, said, "Yes, I think, Dr. Blimmer, we may release this young gentleman from his books just now, the vacation being so very near at hand." "Apostrophe, by all means, apostrophe," said Dr. Blimmer. "My love, you will inform Cornelia, if you please." "Apostrophe, assuredly, apostrophe," said Mrs. Blimmer. The apothecary, bending down, looked closely into Paul's eyes, and felt his head, and his pulse, and his heart, with so much interest and care, that Paul said, "Thank you, sir." "Apostrophe, our little friend, apostrophe," observed Dr. Blimmer, "has never complained." "Apostrophe, oh no." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," replied the apothecary. He was not likely to complain. "Apostrophe, you find him greatly better?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Dr. Blimmer. "Oh, he is greatly better, sir," apostrophe returned the apothecary. Paul had begun to speculate, in his own odd way, on the subject that might occupy the apothecary's mind just at that moment. So musingly had he answered the two questions of Dr. Blimmer. But the apothecary happening to meet his little patient's eyes, as the latter set off on that mental expedition, and coming instantly out of his abstraction with a cheerful smile, Paul smiled in return and abandoned it. He lay in bed all that day, dozing, and dreaming, and looking at Mr. Toots, but got up on the next, and went downstairs. Lo and behold, there was something the matter with the great clock, and a workman on a pair of steps had taken its face off, and was poking instruments into the works by the light of a candle. This was a great event for Paul, who sat down on the bottom stair, and watched the operation attentively. Now and then glancing at the clock face, leaning all askew, against the wall hard by, and feeling a little confused by a suspicion that it was ogling him. The workman on the steps was very civil, and as he said, when he observed Paul, "How do you do, sir?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Paul got into conversation with him, and told him he hadn't been quite well lately. The ice being thus broken, Paul asked him a multitude of questions about chimes and clocks, as whether people watched up in the lonely church steeples by night to make them strike, and how the bells were rung when people died, and whether those were different bells from wedding bells, or only sounded dismal in the fancies of the living. Finding that his new acquaintance was not very well informed on the subject of the curfew bell of ancient days, Paul gave him an account of that institution, and also asked him, as a practical man, what he thought about King Alfred's idea of measuring time by the burning of candles, to which the workman replied that he thought it would be the ruin of the clock trade if it was to come up again. And fine, Paul looked on until the clock had quite recovered its familiar aspect and resumed its sedate inquiry, when the workman, putting away his tools in a long basket, bade him good day and went away. Though not before he had whispered something, on the doormat, to the footman, in which there was the phrase old-fashioned, for Paul heard it. What could that old-fashioned be, that seemed to make the people sorry? What could it be? Having nothing to learn now, he thought of this frequently,
though not so often as he might have done, if he had had fewer things to think of. But he had a great many, and was always thinking, all day long. First, there was Florence coming to the party. Florence would see that the boys were fond of him, and that would make her happy. This was his great theme. Let Florence once be sure that they were gentle and good to him, and that he had become a little favorite among them, and then they would always think of the time he had passed there, without being very sorry. Florence might be all the happier too for that, perhaps, when he came back. When he came back. 50 times a day, his noiseless little feet went up the stairs to his own room, as he collected every book, and scrap, and trifle that belonged to him, and put them all together there, down to the minutes thing, for taking home. There was no shade of coming back on little Paul, no preparation for it, or other reference to it, grew out of anything he thought or did, except this slight one in connection with his sister. On the contrary, he had to think of everything familiar to him, in his contemplative moods and in his wanderings about the house, as being to be parted with, and hence the many things he had to think of, all day long. He had to peep into those rooms upstairs, and think how solitary they would be when he was gone, and wonder through how many silent days, weeks, months, and years, they would continue just as grave and undisturbed. He had to think, would any other child old-fashioned, like himself, stray there at any time, to whom the same grotesque distortions of pattern and furniture would manifest themselves? And would anybody tell that boy of little Dombey, who had been there once? He had to think of a portrait on the stairs, which always looked earnestly after him as he went away, eyeing it over his shoulder, and which, when he passed it in the company of anyone, still seemed to gaze at him, and not at his companion. He had much to think of, in association with a print that hung up in another place, where, in the center of a wandering group, one figure that he knew, a figure with a light about its head benignant, mild, and merciful, stood pointing upward. At his own bedroom window, there were crowds of thoughts that mixed with these, and came on, one upon another, like the rolling waves. Where those wild birds lived, that were always hovering out at sea in troubled weather, where the clouds rose and first began, whence the wind issued on its rushing flight, and where it stopped, whether the spot where he and Florence had so often sat, and watched, and talked about these things, could ever be exactly as it used to be without them, whether it could ever be the same to Florence, if he were in some distant place, and she were sitting there alone. He had to think, too, of Mr. Toots, and Mr. Feeder, B.A., of all the boys, and of Dr. Blimmer, Mrs. Blimmer, and Miss Blimmer, of home, and of his aunt and Miss Tox, of his father, Dombey and son, Walter with the poor old uncle who had got the money he wanted, and that gruff-voiced captain with the iron hand. Besides all this, he had a number of little visits to pay, in the course of the day, to the schoolroom, to Dr. Blimmer's study, to Mrs. Blimmer's private apartment, to Miss Blimmer's, and to the dog. For he was free of the whole house now, to range it as he chose, and, in his desire to part with everybody on affectionate terms, he attended, in his way, to them all. Sometimes he found places in books for Briggs, who was always losing them. Sometimes he looked up words in dictionaries for other young gentlemen who were in extremity. Sometimes he held skeins of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.